Cheating. Your cheating heart will make you weep.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Ruhrink, and Craig Mauger, our House reporter. A little later, David Forsmark, a political consultant out of Oakland County, whose name has been repeated a lot more this last week than I think it ever has been before. He's going to be joining us on the podcast. But first, we got some breaking news coming out of the Supreme Court. Mary Beth Kelly is going to be resigning as of October 1. We just got the press release just a minute ago. John, what do you think of that?
I think it's going to be an interesting pick for Governor Snyder to decide who's going to replace her. There's probably something tells me there might be somebody in his office that might be interested in that.
I mean, somebody who's already run for the Supreme
Court?
Somebody
that's already run for the Supreme Court. Somebody who's got a rock star or, excuse me, Hollywood name. Not rock star, Hollywood name.
Yeah, somebody who's shown up in movies, like maybe The River Runs Through It.
Yeah,
well, that's a possibility. I wonder what was going on here. She's going into the private sector again. A little surprising in that it seemed like that Supreme Court, there was a lot of camaraderie. Bridget McCormick, with another Supreme Court justice, and her are personal friends from even before their time in the Supreme Court. So a little surprising, John.
Mm-hmm. A little surprising, but, you know, sometimes, you know, those positions aren't suited for everybody. She's done it for a little while, and maybe she's more excited by private practice.
And you can make more money in private practice.
More money in private practice.
That's for sure. And it's not the first time somebody has left a job in the Supreme Court and gone to the private sector. I guess I'm thinking Conrad Mallett. That wasn't all that long ago.
That wasn't that long ago. We've had a couple of other examples that I'm trying to draw a blank. I'm drawing a blank on names right now, but it's not the first time that it's happened.
No, absolutely. So we'll keep an eye on that. She's going to step down on October 1. Still a lot of time for, obviously, the governor is going to have a lot of time to go through some applicants, going to weed through some other options. You know, does he feel like he needs to replace a female with a female? There's always that kind of opinion. But very interesting in that it seemed like Mary Beth Kelly was certainly not the most conservative member on that Supreme Court. It seemed like she was, in a sense, a swing vote, if you will, even though there are no real, you know, it's not like it's a split Supreme Court in that there's four Republicans and three Democrats. It's 5-2. But it did seem like she was, if there was anybody on the court who would side with the democratically elected Supreme Court justices, it was Mary Beth Kelly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the tenor of the person that he picks to replace her. Is it going to be a true hard conservative in terms of legal rulings? Is it going to be somebody who's a little more moderate? So it's going to be fun to watch.
Why hasn't the Cindy Gamrat, Todd Corser story gone away, Craig? It's not going to go away, is it?
That was a rocky, sudden transition.
It was, wasn't it? I was just tired of talking about Mary Beth Kelly, just to be honest. I'm going from the quick stop to the quick start.
Why hasn't it gone away?
It's not going to go away, is it?
No, I think we've got at least a few weeks, maybe a few months of this left at minimum.
Why haven't they resigned?
Well, for one, Corser, I don't think that's in his mentality to just say, yeah, I messed up, I should resign and give up my seat. I mean, I think he feels like it's his duty and he has this personal calling to serve in the legislature and to vote his viewpoints. And I just don't think that lines up with who he is as a person. As for Rep. Gamrat, she said on Friday that it's a possibility. It's something that's still on the table. But then again, there's an investigation going on. If there are criminal charges, who knows if there will be. Holding the seat could be a negotiating point, and that's what some people have pointed out behind the scenes. If you're Cindy Gamrat, why give up your seat when that could come in handy later if they do find something to charge you with?
And they don't have any charges against either of these guys. There's no charges yet. We don't know for sure if there's any wrongdoing. There's a possibility of some state resources being used to cover up their affair, but we don't know that yet. And I think that's the reason why Cindy Gamrat hasn't resigned yet, because I don't know if she feels like she's done anything wrong. She wasn't the mastermind behind the email that Corser sent out to try and mask over this whole thing. She obviously knew about it, but she wasn't involved in the crafting. She didn't necessarily see it. She didn't sign off on it. And so while you can say she was involved in an affair with Corser, that's not
certainly not illegal. And if we removed everybody that had an extramarital affair from the legislature, we'd be seeing a lot of people go out the door.
Right. So I think from her viewpoint, you know, why should I? Now you can say, well, it's because she won't be effective going forward, but was she really effective up until then anyway? I mean, she's pretty much been ostracized from the caucus.
I don't think being effective is a standard for serving in the legislature. There'd be a lot of people that would probably have to resign.
That's true. And so then on the Corser sense, why hasn't Corser resigned? I think that he's still really hung up on who this blackmailer is. I mean, and we're just presuming that it's not him, okay? And he thinks that it's his staff, and he thinks David Forsmark, who we're going to have on this show in just a minute, he thinks that they're involved, but let's say they're not, okay? They claim they're not. I think he feels like if he were to resign, then this person would win, that the Lansing, the quote-unquote Lansing Mafia would win. And so I think he's trying to stick it out, to stick them, to say, you know what, I'm not going to let you win. I'm going to hang with it, and if you guys want to vote me out and expel me, there's a possibility that for those few people who still believe in him, he becomes a martyr.
It's possible, but you know what's more interesting than even what Todd Corser thinks about his own resignation is the political dynamics if the House did try to move a resolution of expulsion. I mean, Todd could have done these blackmail emails. He may not have, but we don't know. We may not ever know where these blackmail text messages came from. But I think what was going to be interesting is to watch, does Cotter push a resolution to expel these two members? I think there you can make an argument that the legislature clearly has the power to do it. Do the Democrats help them if the Republicans do make a move? I think that's a much more interesting topic than really what Corser thinks about his own.
It's interesting, though, if the House does go that way, before there's been a conviction, before there's been proven wrongdoing, legal wrongdoing, what kind of precedent does that set going forward? I mean, we talk about David Jay. This happened 13 years ago, and people still talk about this. So whatever they decide to do on Corser and Gamrat, people are going to be talking about that for decades to come. If something else happens, well, what did the House do with Corser and Gamrat? This is precedent. This is history. Do they have enough to do that?
Here's a difficult thing, though. I think they have enough to do it with Corser because I think you can make the argument that he is the one that misused public resources to hide this affair. I don't think you right now can peg that same thing on Cindy Gamrat. I think you could do a resolution against Corser. I think you could make a strong argument for it that he has downgraded and soiled the reputation of the House, that his actions and statements and what he did are totally not in line with what a lawmaker should be. I don't think you can do that with Cindy, though. So that alone becomes another twist.
Just a counter argument here. Is that the precedent the House wants to set? If you use public resources to do private business, you should be expelled. Is that the precedent that they want to set for the chamber going forward?
I don't know why not. The Senate forced Henry Stallings to resign. When he used a Senate staffer to run a Detroit art gallery. They didn't get to that point of expulsion, but they did force him to resign. He knew it was coming. He chose another option to get
out. In this case now, you could say that Todd Corser was doing this for political purposes. And so maybe the point Craig's getting at is if people are using their public offices for their own political gain, is that a precedent that is set that is going to be hard to enforce? And once you set that precedent, there's a line that I think is blurred in many cases.
But that's been a line that's been around Lansing forever and a day.
Financial corruption is different, I think, than what Corser was trying to do here.
But we all know there are staffers that, you know, have liberal vacation policies. They do campaign stuff. You know, there's all sorts of vague lines there. It is a tough one to enforce, I'll admit it, but it's been an issue that's been around Lansing forever and a day.
So maybe the expulsion argument for Todd Corser is that he has lost the confidence of the House representatives and those of his constituents, and that's why he has to go, that he has no more credibility, he has no more confidence, and we have no more confidence in his ability to do the job. And so for that reason, he must go. They're not going to do that this week, though, Craig. I mean, they can't do this until Tim Bowen's
the Speaker and his staff, his chief of staff, have been very clear that they're waiting to see what the investigation finds. And if the House investigation finds that something criminal may have happened, that's going to be turned over to another law enforcement agency that's going to do another investigation, I'm sure, its own investigation. So how long will it take until there's a definite answer of what happened here?
Think about all the documents, investigations, and reports we can peruse and write about coming in the next coming months. I'm excited.
Well, I'm glad you're excited. We'll ship a couple your way, John. You can do a couple of these stories. All you got to do is a few of them, and then you're going to get a little tired of this.
You're already fatigued.
Just take my word for it. I know we've only done this for about a week, haven't we? 10 days? I mean, for crying out loud. But it seems like we've been writing this story since May, though, hasn't it, Craig? Even though we haven't written anything until last Thursday or last Friday morning, I think we feel like we've been covering it for a lot longer.
It's been a long week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was a real long week. Well, let's add to the story here. We're going to put another log on this fire. We've got David Forsmark joining us.
Dave, thanks for joining us on the program today.
No problem, Kyle.
We're about a week away or a week removed from this initial Courser Gamrat story. You've been kind of tied into it. Tell me what kind of reaction that you've received from people after they heard Todd Courser try and drag you into this by saying you were the author of this blackmail, if you want to call it, the attempt on him.
Well, I've yet to find anybody who believed him. So, you know, even news reporters I hadn't met were sort of calling up with a kind of idea of this guy is too crazy to be believed, but we have to ask the question, did you do it, you know?
Right.
I think I've heard Chuck or Randy might be coming out with something today, but who knows? That's not real.
Why do you think that you were fingered as a part of this? Are you friends with Josh Klein and Ben Graham? Kind of tell me, give our listeners an understanding of your relationship with these guys.
Yeah, I'm good friends with the two of them. And, you know, I've hired them for things. They're really good. They're really good at what they do. And they're good guys, and they do good work. And you know, when you work with some people, you end up hanging out with them. And I like them. They're good guys. They got a lot of integrity, and they're good at their job. And, you know, we have fun. So I think it might be a couple of weeks ago, our favorite restaurants, the Mulefoot Gastro Pub out in Emily City, and Josh's cousins are actually the master chefs behind it all. And it's out in the middle of nowhere, but it's been an Hour magazine and everything. It's maybe the best restaurant in Michigan. It's incredible. So we're out there having fun with the wives and everything. And Josh does his usual check-in on Facebook to, you know, hey, Rick Mulefoot, you know, kind of thing. And then he gets his little look on his face and ends up putting with Dave Forsmark and Ben Graham. And then I think he put the word game planning.
Oh, I see.
So, but, you know, we were actually talking about upcoming campaigns and work and things like that, you know, as you always do.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't untrue, but I think he knows Todd Creech at Facebook too. So could have been a little trigger. On the other hand, I think maybe his whole Lansing establishment, Lansing mafia thing wasn't getting him the pull he thought it was. So maybe he thought it'd be better to try to put an actual face to it. I don't know. Pretty funny thinking of me as the ultimate political insider, though.
Well, and then give our listeners a little bit of background into what you've done and how long you've been doing it.
Well, I've been working for people in politics since 92. Well, actually 90, but 92 was when I started doing it as a job. And that year, my three big races, two were Democrat primaries. Tim Barshaw over John Cherry by 20 points in a congressional seat. And but Sandy Hill we spent like $28,000 and took the House back for the Republicans. Well, gave the Republicans the tie in the House for the first time, and against a three-term incumbent Democrat. And that was a 40-vote margin out of 40,000 votes. And that was one of those where the political class in Lansing was always controlled by one or two agencies. There weren't as many as there are now. So it was kind of a big deal to have your own agency and not be part of, you know, MRG or something. Yeah.
So you have not been part of kind of the traditional firms here in Lansing.
No, I've never taken a staff job. I'm never interested in driving all the way across the state to work 9 to 5 for $35,000 or $40,000 in a cubicle. So no, I didn't do the traditional work your way up thing, or work with any of the traditional agents. Since I had Democrats early on, conservative Democrats, but Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a different, kind of a different thing in how I work. And I do a lot of judges' races, too, which some people in my business don't like to get into.
Judges' races?
Yeah.
And so when you heard your name mentioned then by Todd Courser, what was your initial reaction? You were at the Donald Trump thing when you heard, right?
Oh, I laughed out loud, but there's lots of things that laugh out loud at a Trump rally.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really noticed that much. I think it might have been between jokes or something, because a few people looked over, and then we started passing the phone up and down the aisle. But it's easily one of the funniest things that's ever happened to me.
Do you know how to? I don't even know how to get access to a burner phone. Do you know how that even works?
I don't know. On TV, they buy them in a drugstore, don't they?
Is that what they do?
Isn't that the prepaid minute phones? That's how they do it on TV. I think that's how drug dealers do it in The Wire.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I don't know. I've never had to worry about it, so I guess I don't even really know.
Well, burner phone, I think, is what law enforcement calls them. Technically, I think they're just a prepaid minute phone or something, right?
Oh, okay. Is that what? So that's what this is.
I think there are legitimate reasons to buy them. You know, somebody sends a kid off to college, they give them a phone with prepaid minutes. Although now everybody's got unlimited minutes, but. I don't know. There's probably less of a reason to have one now than there used to be.
But you don't own them.
No. I got the Verizon bill to prove.
Todd Corser obviously hasn't resigned. It doesn't look like he's going in that direction. Why do you think he hasn't resigned as of yet?
Asking the same person why Todd Corser does or doesn't do something is probably just a futile exercise.
Okay. What about Cindy Yan?
I think the two of them are so caught up with themselves still. The Cindy Gamrat thing mystifies me more, and her husband's role really mystifies me.
What do you mean by that? What's mystifying?
Because he knows better. He knows better than what she said when she got up and talked about the staff the other day. He knows better, and shame on him. I never like these good wife press conferences anyway. This one's, unusual because it reverses the sexes. But in this case, standing up and participating and slandering people who actually did go out of the way to try to protect you, that's not man card territory in my book.
So as far as talking about her staff, and what you're saying is that the staff was actually doing a real good job from what you understand.
They're not only doing a really good job. Who else has got three people like that and that they can rely on in a House seat? I mean, the standard arrangement is one person like the three of them and somebody who's, kind of a receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, and that's really why they did it, to be able to incorporate all three guys. And it was creative. There's nothing originally wrong with it. But one thing I learned from Todd's missus was that he said he started being blackmailed in January, if you call it blackmail, which we won't get into what's the legal definition, because that's tenuous too. But January, remember what news he was making in January? He's griping about not being able to sit next to Cindy on the floor of the House.
Oh, that's right. Right. And
yeah.
He was changing his office furniture around too, if I remember right.
Yeah, but he was exposing for the cause of liberty that the sitting ceremony is a big fraud. Well, and then complaining that the speaker had separated specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Complaining that the speaker had separated the two of them on the floor. So that put a whole new spin on that for me.
So what did that tell you?
Well, it tells me that when he says he could be blackmailed in January, it means he was blackmailable in January, because it's a timeline of
what you're saying.
On since at least January, which hadn't occurred to me until then. I figured it was a little bit of a break-in, getting to know you period.
It kind of tells you that maybe this was going on before.
Yeah, I don't think this was something that happened in work proximity. Either that or whatever. I'm not going to speculate, but it sure looks that way to me.
Any other things that you think our listeners should know about this situation? Any kind of revelations or thoughts that you have on this whole thing?
Well, tune in today for Josh's press conference. I don't want to take too much away. There's definitely going to be new material there.
All right. Well, very good. Thanks a lot. David Forsmark, a political consultant out of the Southeast Michigan area. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Sure.
You've been listening to the MERS Monday podcast. I'm Kyle Malin. That's going to do it for this week's edition. Until next week, take care.
He'll walk the floor the way